translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Therefore, I should now give up my attachment for things created by the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I should engage in thought of the Lord and should thus surrender unto Him. This material creation, having been created by the external energy of the Lord, is like an imaginary town visualized on a hill or in a forest. Every conditioned soul has a natural attraction and attachment for material things. One must simply give up this attachment and surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maharaj Katvanga is speaking. Purport. When passing through a mountainous region in an airplane, one might sometimes see a city in the sky with towers and palaces, or one may see similar things in a big forest. This is called a Gandharvapura, a phantasmagoria. This entire world resembles a phantasmagoria, and every materially situated person has attachment for it. But Katvanga Maharaj, because of his advanced Krishna consciousness, was not interested in such things. Even though a devotee may engage apparently in material activities, he knows his position very well. Nirbandha Krishna Sambande Yukta Vairagya Uchchite. If one engages all material things in relationship with the loving service of the Lord, one is situated in Yukta Vairagya, proper renunciation. In this material world, nothing should be accepted for one's sense gratification. Everything should be accepted for the service of the Lord. This is the mentality of the spiritual world. Maharaj Katvanga advises one to give up material attachment and surrender unto the personality of Godhead. Thus, one achieves success in life. This is called pure bhakti yoga, which involves vairagya vidya, renunciation and knowledge. Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga shikshartamekam purusho puranam si krishna chaitanya sarira dari krikam purayastamaham prabhadye. This was spoken by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in glorification of Lord Chaitanya. Let me surrender unto the personality of Godhead who has appeared now as Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is an ocean of all mercy and has come down to teach us material attachment, detachment, learning, and devotional service to Himself. Chaitanya Chari Chandrodaya Nataka 674. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu inaugurated this movement of Vairagya Vidya by which one detaches himself from material existence, engages in loving devotional service. Krishna conscious movement of devotional service is the only process by which to counteract our false prestige in this material world. Om Agyan Timidandasya Gyana Jana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadanti Swampadantikam Bande Hum Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sarvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchina Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneswari Vishabhanu Suti Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kompa Tarubhischa Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namaho Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranathananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So, sometimes we wonder, so many verses throughout the Shastras, which denounces, explains material energy. Why so much? Practically almost every verse, and at least every purport, talks about the futility or the illusionary existence of this material energy. Why? Because that's the problem. We're attached. We're attached. And because we're attached, we can't really understand what is reality. If you're looking here, as Prabhupada gives a kind of a interesting comparison, you're in a plane and you look out the window and you see a sky, you see a town and palaces in the sky. I mean, if you saw that, you would think either you were intoxicated or somebody's playing some trick on you. Because there's no such thing. It's simply an illusion. So those things we can understand. Just like when we take rest at night, we sometimes dream. And when we wake up, we really don't put much, you know, importance, emphasis on the dream. We don't live throughout that dream throughout the day. We focus on the day-to-day activities. So it comes and it goes. And it doesn't have much so importance. In fact, we even see it as a dream. We call a dream something that is imagination. Some of the mind creates something that has no reality in existence. So that is the subtle existence of the living entity. So there is a gross existence, which is this material, fundamental, hardcore, made out of eight elements, bhumir apana lobayu kamana buddhi evacha hankar iti amme brinda prakriti astada. You can see those. You can actually touch them. You can interact with them. But it's another form of the same thing of the dream existence. Why? Because it comes and it goes. And it's interesting how Shastras describe what is reality. What is reality is something that never changes. So what in this world doesn't change? So thereby, from the Acharyas and from the Lord, this world is unreal. Why? Because anything that changes is always one way at one time and another way at another time. So what is the reality when it's one way or when it's another way? And we all see that, you know. As we go through life, we go through changes. And we actually adjust our existence according to those changes. And that adjustment is just in order to adapt to the changes as life goes on. So the adjustment is just as false as the changes. So this is this material world. It is simply a phantasmagoria, it says here. But it appears to be so real. And as Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, everyone has attachment for this material world. Why is that? Because our existence in the spiritual world is so long-term that so far removed from our experience that we have no recollection of what it was being with Krishna, being in the spiritual world, engaging in pure devotional service. Although, in terms of eternal time, this flash of existence in this material world is so insignificant as far as time. How can you measure eternal time? Something that is eternal. It cannot be, doesn't have a beginning and also doesn't have an end. So where do you start your measurements from? There's no such, you know, activity. So this existence in this material world is called a sojourn. Sojourn means something that is very temporary. Although we've been here so how many lifetimes? We can't even count the lifetimes the living entity has been in a material world. But that is totally fractional, or even not even existential, when you compare it to our eternal relationship in the spiritual world. It's so small. And it says that when the living entity returns to the spiritual world, they will simply look at their existence in the material world as some dream that just flashed in front of their eyes and then left. And that's it. But when we're on this level, we're in this time frame, everything, every moment, every, you know, hour, whatever you might, measurements of time, seem so real and so existent, so long-term. And that's the illusion. Just like when you're in a dream, when you're in the middle of a dream, you may be experiencing some sensation, either happiness or distress in the dream. You're in that experience, and that experience captures your whole attention. And therefore, it becomes the only reality at the time. See how time works? It puts us into an experience of something that's happening, and it appears to be that's all there is at that time. So when we string a few of these together, we call it a lifespan. But when you look at it from perspective of eternal time and our existence in relationship to the Krishna and the spiritual world, it's practically non-existent. So therefore, you know, the scriptures just constantly help us to somehow or other become aware of the nature of this material world. And why we shouldn't really put any hope for happiness or success in anything in this world. Srila Prabhupada was walking in Mexico. He was in Mexico, and he was with his devotees. They were out somewhere on this in the streets, and there was a huge garbage dumpster. And there was something written on the side in Spanish. So Prabhupada asked the devotees, "What does that say?" And it says, "Put your trash here." So Prabhupada said, "Yes, we should put the whole material world there." So this is the realization of a great soul. They see everything in this world as simply insignificant. They don't put much value in what is here. But what they do put value in is that the things in this world are opportunities to get us out of this world. Anything in this world can keep us in this world or get us out of this world. It's just everything has this like dual, you know, nature to it. It's like a knife can either be used as a surgeon to save a person's life or by a thief to rob and kill someone. Same knife. So in the same way, anything in this world, practically everything in this world, is either keeping us in this world or an opportunity to get out of this world. So here, it says that one should use whatever Krishna sends in our life, even, you know, our bodies, our minds, our possessions, our time, our energy, our creative intelligence, whatever we have for Krishna service. And in that way, nothing is material anymore. From the highest perspective of existence, we understand that there is nothing material. Krishna doesn't make, he sees all his energies as spiritual. But when those energies act in a certain way, in accordance with the living entity's encounter with that energy, it becomes either material or spiritual. But for Krishna, it's all spiritual. So for us, this material energy, we call it material energy, it's called Bahiranga Shakti, the external energy of the Lord. There's the Antaranga Shakti, the spiritual energy, and the Tatastha Shakti, that's us, the living entities who are caught in this material energy, the three main energies. So there's Bahiranga Shakti, the external energy of the Lord. When it's used in the service of the Lord, it can develop the qualities of the Antaranga Shakti. In other words, it becomes spiritualized. Prabhupada was talking to Mr. Patel. Have you listened to those morning walks, 1974, 75, 76? Mr. Patel was a doctor, and he really liked Srila Prabhupada. And the man was very intelligent, and also very, very, what we say, religious, very spiritually inclined. And he would speak so freely with Prabhupada. And sometimes the devotees on the morning walk would get a little bit unnerved because he was very familiar with Prabhupada, and he would argue with Prabhupada, and he would joke with Prabhupada, where everyone else is in awe and reverence. And Prabhupada didn't mind. He accepted him that way. But sometimes he would defiantly resist whatever Prabhupada said and get angry at Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada would defeat him, and then he would calm down. Prabhupada liked him because he was serious about Krishna consciousness, very serious. So Prabhupada was talking that the spiritual master's body is spiritual. And so Mr. Patel was saying, well, but not like Krishna. Krishna's body is spiritual, but the spiritual master's body is not like Krishna's. Prabhupada said, spiritual is spiritual. There's no two kinds of spiritual. He said, no, no. And Prabhupada explained in a very philosophical way that when you put an iron rod in the fire and you keep it in the fire, he's used that example so many times, we've heard it, it develops the qualities of iron, and at one point it no longer has any metallic qualities anymore. It acts like fire. So when one uses something in the service of the Lord, that no longer has qualities of the material energy anymore. It actually becomes spiritualized. And the results of that, it takes us to Krishna. It takes us to Krishna rather than taking us away from Krishna. So this verse, Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha, Anashakti Visayam, Yoyatam Upayunjite, Nirbandhe Krishna Sambandhe, Yukta Vairagya Uchchite. This is spoken by Srila Rupa Goswami. So many spiritualists think that renunciation means to stop material activities. But that's only half of it. Without simply stopping material activities means you don't really detach yourself from the desire to enjoy. The desire to enjoy is not given up by stopping. The desire is in the heart, and it's long term. Therefore, when we take those material things and use it in Krishna's service, that's renunciation. That's the perfection of renunciation. Prabhupada would always say, there was one yogi or spiritualist, if you gave him money, he would say, oh, can't touch that. It's money, it's dirty, it's material. Prabhupada said, you give me? Come on. And I will use it in Krishna's service. Not for himself, but for the service of the Lord. So this is actually spiritual vision, that they see and use whatever comes by way of their activities in the service of the Lord. And that's the difference between material and spiritual. So, therefore, this is something that takes practice. Prabhupada explains this in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that one has to practice this art of renunciation. It's practice. Because why? We're attached. And because we're attached, we still want to enjoy something in this material world. And because of that enjoyment tendency, we can't really see the value of things that come our way. Because for a person who is fixed in Krishna consciousness, whatever they comes their way, whether it's distress, happiness, or a mixture of either one, They see it as Krishna's arrangement, but to be used in Krishna's service. Just like if you get a terminal disease, or you get something, a lawsuit or something, You think, oh, this is terrible. I'm going to lose my body. I'm going to lose my money. I'm going to lose so many things. But a pure devotee or devotee who understands, they say, this is an opportunity to preach Krishna consciousness. This is an opportunity to go deeper into my relationship with Krishna. Completely opposite understanding or assimilation of the experience. And that's the difference between success and failure in this world. To be able to see everything or practice that mood. And Prabhupada gave a very simple example. You know, if you listen to Prabhupada, I'm sure most of you do, he gives the most basic, simple examples to the highest philosophical knowledge. He doesn't simply make some really philosophical, undiscernible, you know, explanation of something, and then you try to figure out what he said. It seems simple. Someone asked Prabhupada, how can we see Krishna everywhere? Prabhupada took off his glasses. He said, when you see my glasses, what do you think? And they said, well, we see through your glasses, Prabhupada, we connect it to you. He said, yes. You connect the object to the owner. So whatever you see belongs to Krishna. Simple. But it's powerful when you think about it. How powerful it is. Nothing belongs to me. Everything is there for, it belongs to Krishna. It was put here by Krishna through his external energy, and it has a purpose. And so where do we fit in? We get the happiness to use it in Krishna's service. And when Krishna is pleased by that offering, and then our hearts are satisfied and our minds are not anxious about enjoying things in this world. Because our enjoyment, which is the goal of life, some people ask, well, what is the goal of life? Right? You hear so many answers. What is the goal? There's only one goal in life, to be happy. That's it. There's only one goal, to be happy. Somebody was just telling me the other day, I was here for the Gita Jayanti. One teacher in school, she asked the students to write down what you want to be in life. So all the students wrote something down. They were young kids, you know, I don't know, maybe 10, 11 years old. But one student wrote a face with a big smile on it. And he showed it to the teacher. The teacher said, no, that's, you got the wrong idea. What do you want to be in life? And he said, no, this is it. You don't understand. I want to be happy. That person was John Lennon. So, yeah, this is actually the conclusion or the results of everything we do. It should bring happiness. But the material energy works in such a way that when we try to enjoy it, it brings about suffering. It's just amazing how it's constituted. Anything we try to enjoy in this world, what is that verse? Ye hi sparsa yada ja bhoga dukkha yonya evite avanta vanta kuntaya nateshu ramate buddha. Krishna speaks this in the fifth chapter of Gita, that the objects, the sense objects in this world, they lead to suffering. And the more happiness something brings you, the more suffering that same object will bring you. Haribo. Right? It's true. Because you'll lose it. Or it'll give you something different after a due course of time. Jai Sisi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. So this is the feature of intelligence. Just like people who have a lot of money. It was 1920s in America. And in the early 20s, there was such an economic growth. The stock market and businesses were booming. It was right after World War I. And things started to develop on all levels, and people were becoming rich fast. But then in 1929, everything changed. And the whole stock market plummeted overnight to practically nothing. It was a huge economic crash. And what happened was people were jumping out of windows, committing suicide. There was a large amounts of suicides because overnight people lost everything, all their fortune and all their plans that was based on that fortune. And so they thought, well, there's no reason to live. So the example is here. The more something brings you happiness, the more that same object will bring you distress when it's no longer the same way. And that's just the way the material energy works. And Krishna says something. You know, sometimes people... Prabhupada was saying something the other day. It was just so funny. He was saying, when you do something, you take credit. But when something goes wrong, you blame Krishna. I did it. And you take some credit, but when it goes wrong, God, why did it happen? You know? Think about it. Everybody wants to take credit for what they do and blame God for what goes wrong. Right? This is the material energy, right? So when people suffer or something, they say, well, why is God doing this? But God doesn't hide behind some kind of, you know, false philosophy. He actually says that the suffering that you're getting in this world, it's coming from me. Not the individual way you get it, but the process of suffering. In other words, the process of suffering is built into the material energy. How it comes, that's up to you. But Krishna says, it's my fault. He writes that. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that. Krishna said, I did it. Why? Because I love you. I don't want you to stay here. I want you to come back to me. If it's such a nice place, you might want to stay here. So Krishna's love for his parts and parcels when they drift in, away from him is to arrange different ways to get them back. Because the sweetest and most natural, the easiest way is to engage in devotional service to the Lord and make that the only goal in life. But then again, not everyone is inclined to that. In fact, very few are. So then Krishna will arrange so many other ways to somehow or other encourage and entice and to even coerce the living entities to come back to him. And that's called love. Because whatever Krishna does, it's out of love. That's his only way of doing things, although it comes out in different forms. So he doesn't want us to stay in this material world. And so we can live in this material world, still take responsibilities for the activities in this material world by not living in such a way as that we're looking for happiness in this material world. And Prabhupada gives the formula. He gives the formula how to live in this world in such a way that you don't have to really be part of this world. And he explains it in a very interesting, a little, I don't know, not analogy, yeah, it's analogy. He says, a woman, she's married to her husband. Now, but she's more interested in her lover. Her lover keeps her mind and heart constantly absorbed. But in order for her husband not to suspect her relationship with her lover, she does her service to her husband expertly. In such a way that he thinks everything is fine. But in her mind and heart, she's living with her lover. Because wherever your mind is, or wherever your heart is, your mind is. And wherever your mind and heart is, that's where you are. It's not so much physical location. Just like we can be here now, but as soon as we take our mind somewhere else, that's where we are. And if we have something that's very dear to us, we might find ourselves going to that quite often. So wherever physically located we are, it doesn't necessarily mean we're there. So if we learn the art of bringing our hearts and minds to Krishna, by remembering Krishna in every activity we do, or practicing the mood of renunciation and offering everything to Krishna as a service, then you're with Krishna. And you can still maintain your families, you can still take your occupation seriously. But we understand it's necessary, but it's not the cause of happiness. That's all. Necessary burden to maintain the body. And of course, this goes on not through the whole life, as one gets on in years, one retires from material activities and focuses completely on the Supreme Lord in devotion. That is the system that is taught by the acharyas. But for now, we have to learn how to see things in relationship to Krishna and not look for happiness in these things. Because we'll only be disappointed. Disappointment comes by putting faith and happiness in material things. Or material, anything material. So, but when you put your heart and mind in Krishna, through the process of bhakti, which means chanting the holy names of the Lord, hearing about the Krishna. Now, we chant the holy names of the Lord, we're all enthusiastic to chant. But how much time are we hearing about Krishna, his pastimes, his activities, his entourage, his qualities? These really nourish the heart and mind and attach us to Krishna even more and more. Prabhupada said, I wrote these books. Why? For the devotees. We're on a book marathon. We're distributing the books. So many people are getting the benefits of the books. But what about the devotees who are giving the books? We should also see that Prabhupada said it's for you, the books. So what's in these books? It's a treasure house of unlimited knowledge that is the vision. Knowledge is like sight. I think it mentions here also that when you're in illusion, you're seeing something that's not there. So that's ignorance. When you apply knowledge, it's an illusion, then you see correctly. So knowledge is like vision. It gives you the correct understanding. So when we have knowledge of Krishna, and we have his pastimes, his activities, his qualities, then whatever is here in this material world, it's just here. Just like many times we see something, but we don't see something. Example is, you're doing something, and there's so many other things happening around you, but you don't even notice it because you're doing what you're doing, right? And other people could be doing other things right around you, and sometimes you don't even know they're there. You just pass it by, or it becomes indistinct, or not even there. So in the same way, when we absorb ourselves in Krishna as much as possible, the things of this world sort of disappear. They're still there, and when we encounter them, but they're insignificant, and more closely they're bothersome. So that comes by hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. Srinbata Swakata Krishna Purnya Shravana Kirtanaha Ridato Sto Abhadrani Vidhunoti Sahisatam. And Krishna says, when you develop this taste for hearing and chanting my glories, I enter into your heart and I clear away all your material attachments. Personally, through that process of bathing in the nectar of Krishna consciousness. The holy name and Krishna's pastimes, his qualities, his names, his forms, Mahaprabhu the same, Ram the same. So this is the principle of detachment. It becomes fast. Why? Because one gets a higher taste. Visayam virivartante niharasya dehinam raso varjam raso pyaspa param drisva nivartante. When you get a higher taste, you're hungry, somebody gives you an old chapati. Because you're hungry, you might eat it. But if somebody comes along and says, here's Mother Kalanganaha's sandesh, you'll just say, well, maybe I lost my appetite for the chapati. So when you get something sweeter or higher, you lose the taste for something lower. So that's the process of purifying our hearts, to get that higher taste by hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord as much as possible. any association of devotees like that. So this material energy is what it is. It won't go away, but at the same time, it can't give you what you're looking for. What are we looking for? Happiness. It's just not there. Somebody would, Prabhupada was discussing this point in detail, and Prabhupada was saying, there's no happiness here. He was very adamant. It was a long, long discussion. He was talking about different things. And finally, one devotee said, Prabhupada, what about the mode of goodness? The mode of goodness says it's characterized by happiness. Prabhupada said, the mode of goodness is characterized by knowledge. And knowledge, and this knowledge says there's no happiness here. That was the end of that conversation. So Prabhupada's point was that the happiness that mode of goodness is, when seen from in perspective to real happiness, is another form of suffering. Because it's still within the modes, and it's also changeable. So when you have knowledge, then you can understand, you know, what is the source of happiness and what appears to be happiness but is something else. So this comes through hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord and detaching ourselves like that. So it's a great science, and Bhagavatam gives us the formula. It gives us the method and the results. And that if we engage things in the service of the Lord, which belongs to the Lord, gradually we detach ourselves from the desire to enjoy these things. And actually, they also become enjoyable when you use them in Krishna's service. It's not that they lose their enjoying. They actually take on a type of enjoyment that is no longer an attachment for the happiness that it brings you, but it's the enjoyment of using it in Krishna's service. Then that object is also enjoyable because it's connected back to the source, Krishna. Okay, so any questions or comments?